Today is September 9th, 2015, and this is episode number 323 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a bee in my own bonnet. Get the full story on anything we cover this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you, the person who is hearing this right now, if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I'm a bee in my own bonnet. I whack myself in the head, but I keep buzzing around. Wah, wah, wah. I have no idea where that came from.
I don't either, but we'll go with it.
Yeah, it's just been a long day. I think that's how it manifests itself.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, it's been a long day because of Apple's media event.
Yes, that's true. So not long in a bad way, just long in a time way.
That would be the Hey Siri event. Not to be mistaken for the Hey Siri event. Which is how I was writing it all morning.
But, you know, you did it with conviction. Hey, Siri, turn off the lights. Someone out there's really mad at me now.
That's funny. Flashback humor. Let's see here. Tim Cook, I think it was a fantastic event. I think it was actually Tim Cook's best event to date.
I was really impressed.
What do you say about that?
I think you're right. This is Tim Cook's best event to date. It went off from an audience perspective without a hitch. It looked very well rehearsed and it went very smoothly. And the announcements didn't feel like they were trying to just drag the event out to make it longer.
No, and it also didn't seem rushed. It was actually well paced. The events that were clearly rehearsed to a T were better than anyway. It was a fine event.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done.
I got a question though. Airstrip. I'm sure folks who are familiar with the medical world are familiar with this technology and this company, but it just seems like a really bad name for a medical related service.
So clearly there's something that we don't know about the medical industry that makes the name make sense.
I guess so.
That's all I can figure.
But they were showing off some really cool stuff with Apple Watch.
Yes. And being able to collect data from a patient's Apple Watch and send it directly to the doctor and have it all HIPAA compliant because it's...
Because that's important.
Yeah.
These are the guidelines that the regulations that that cover what a doctor can and can't disclose.
Right. So what it means from an end user perspective is the data that's being collected by your Apple Watch and then sent off to your doctor is being done in a way where your privacy is protected. And if the data is intercepted, it is not in a format that bad guys can use.
Yeah, and what they showed does a lot more than that. It's not just collecting data from Apple Watch. It's actually a doctor's staff being able to send them information and having much greater control over getting that information right on their watch, including seeing snapshots of data and actually getting some live data and being able to navigate and scroll using the digital crown. It was all very interesting, and it should certainly do well for Apple Watch in the medical space.
I'm thinking so. I mean, it was a pretty compelling demo. And I can say that because I've played a doctor on stage, haven't I? I know I've played a lawyer on stage.
I once auditioned for the role of nurse practitioner Janet.
That's right. Okay, so we're qualified.
Yeah, totally.
Totally.
Totally. We have opinions here. Let's see here. Apple also showed off some new Apple Watch models, but I mean, really, we're just talking about some new colors.
Just new colors.
New colors, yeah.
But hey, what about the Hermes watches?
I was personally pretty humdrum all that stuff, but you mentioned seeing a bunch of people going...
People boo-boo. On Twitter were flipping over that. Like, this is the coolest thing they've ever seen, and people are... They don't even care how much money it's going to cost. They need this now.
Huh. So these are basically new strap styles that Apple has developed with Hermes, the French fashion line.
Yes. And when you get those watch bands, your Apple Watch also gets a special Hermes. How do you
Hermes,
say
it? I think.
Hermes. Yeah. Gets a special Hermes watch face.
Yeah, which is interesting. And I mean, you know, there's a wraparound wrist strap that wraps around twice. I've never cared for those whatsoever. And there's another, and I forget what it's called, but there's another one where the back of the strap, like, essentially goes underneath the Apple Watch. Don't really personally care for that. I don't know. Whatever. I wasn't all that interested in them.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a subjective thing. This is fashion. Yeah. We're talking about fashion.
Yep. And you are clearly not the market Apple had in mind for this. And I saw it and I'm like, okay, well, the bands look weird to me, but they also look like they're high quality. And the fact that Apple's calling this out by name, that's a big thing. And I'm not into watches. And so I'm like, I've never heard of this company, but they must be good.
I'm actually familiar with them from my days at Domino's Pizza. when you managed a store and it broke $10,000 in sales for 1 week for the first time, you got one of Tom Monahan, the then owner of the company's Hermes ties as a reward. And I think it was like a $300 tie at the time. And this was in the 80s.
Okay.
When, you know, that was a lot of money. And, anyway, I've been familiar with this line. It's a high fashion brand, and it's, you know, definitely a thing in that world. I don't know. Anyway, this stuff is objective, and this is more of Apple tapping the world of fashion to make wearable computing accessible to more people, and that's mm-hmm. a great thing. It doesn't personally appeal to me, but I get why they did it, and judging from the reaction that you saw on Twitter, clearly it was a smart move.
Yeah, people sounded like they were willing to part with internal organs without batting an eye to get a hold of one of these. Hmm. So I think Apple teamed up with the right company to make this special watch band thing just for Apple Watch.
We also got some new Product Red straps.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a good thing. Product Red being the... charity put together by Bono for AIDS research and AIDS care.
Yes, and the bands looked good.
Yeah, they look good. But what we didn't get, I mean, this is the same, these are the same Apple Watches that were introduced earlier this year.
I would have been stunned if we'd gotten new models. I mean, new colors, okay, whatever, that's no surprise, or that's not anything that has me surprised, but a new model, that would have really surprised me.
You know, I was 50-50 on it, mainly because I think that the current Apple Watch is, as we've discussed, lacking some killer functionality, and it wouldn't have surprised me to see Apple revamp the line for the holidays to, you know, really goose sales of the device, but they didn't. But they did introduce these new colors, and there's new colors in the stainless steel, new colors in the aluminum versions. You know, whatever. It's the same
new
device.
Band colors.
Yeah, something in pink.
Yeah,
yeah,
but but they're not calling it pink. What are they calling it? Rose gold?
Yeah, they called it rose gold, but it wasn't rose gold. I'm actually still confused on that, so we'll talk about that once we've actually had time to look at it.
Well, keep in mind that that quite often when Apple shows us their own photographs of their products, mm-hmm. they have failed at properly representing the product. Not like they're trying to mislead us, but I think they do a bad job of getting colors right. And I have routinely looked at the colors of Apple products from their presentations and thought, this is really bad. And then I go into an Apple store and see them in person, and I'm like, oh, actually, this is a really good color. So what I'm hoping is that it's the same thing with the rose gold color that they introduced.
Yeah, it won't be. But that's okay.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're right.
We did not get anything new on WatchOS 2, which is going to be released here shortly in the next few days, right? Was that the 16th that was going to be released?
I believe it's next. Yeah, 16th, next Friday.
And wait, the 16th isn't next Friday.
Wait, am I mixing? Yeah, it's the 16th. I've got my dates all mixed up. Wednesday. Okay, Wednesday.
Roughly a week from today.
So, okay, so that's when iOS 9 comes out also. So they're releasing them on the same day.
Was iOS 9 on the 16th?
I thought iOS 9 was on the 16th, and that WatchOS 2 was a couple of days later. So maybe that's on the 18th.
It's a good thing that we're...
it's been a long day.
We're professionals.
And, you know, and the thing is, I actually typed all these things this morning when the event was happening. But I was typing really fast.
Okay, you got it right. This is the 16th for iOS 9. So WatchOS 2 on the 16th and iOS 9 on the 16th. We didn't see anything new in WatchOS 2. We weren't shown anything new in WatchOS 2. I guess we were shown everything back at WWDC.
Yeah, it was just app demos that we got today.
Yeah, right. We definitely saw some more apps demoed. Native apps will be a big part of that. That's going to be something that I'm hoping unleashes the Apple Watch to a certain extent.
I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah, I am too. WatchOS 2 looked good back in June, and I'm looking forward to seeing it on September 16th. And we'll also get third-party complications, which are the little pieces of information that are on the watch face.
The data doodads.
Yeah, the data doodads. Yeah, really looking forward to that.
I think that's going to be pretty cool too.
And despite Dave Hamilton's comment, I would really like to see third-party watch faces.
I would too.
I just don't like Apple's watch faces. Not one of them that I care for. The one I like the most is the solar one, and that one's the least useful.
That's kind of funny. Yeah, I use a customized version of Utility.
Which one am I using? I'm using Color. I'm using a customized version of Color currently. I do, like I said, I like the solar one, but...
Yeah, if I'm doing a lot of stuff at night where I'm not going to be indoors, I have a customized version of Color that I use where everything's pretty much all red.
Right. Yeah, I'm blue. I don't like the color. Anyway, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just not satisfied with Apple Watch yet, even though I wear it every day.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah. I also have a train outside my window that just decided to just rev up to like some ungodly RPM.
It's how they tell you that they love you and they're really interested in you, Brian.
Apparently. All right, so let's just move on from Apple Watch. The Apple Watch stuff was boring. That's just all there was to it.
All right, well.
Where to now?
I'm still excited about WatchOS 2. Let's see. How about the iPad Pro? Because okay. I'm really excited about that.
Big iPad Pro. Big 12.9-inch iPad.
Yeah. Speakers on the corners all the way around.
Four of them.
So you get your stereo sound no matter which way you're holding it. That's kind of cool.
You get your stereo sound facing downward, although I'm sure that Apple has designed it to work.
I'm sure they have. I mean, they designed the acoustic chambers for the speakers to be part of the unibody shell. So I'm assuming that since they went to that effort, that they thought about how the sound is going to come out of the iPad and did it in such a way that it's not going to be lame. At least I hope so, because they're not cheap.
No, they're not cheap, but they're not as expensive as I feared they might be. They start at $799.
Right. So that's a 32 gigabyte model. And then, so they have two capacities, 32 and 128.
Okay.
And so you get Wi-Fi only in the 32 gig model. And in the 128 model, you have the option of Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi plus LTE.
Okay. That's interesting. So you can't get... Why would they not give you the option of having the LTE?
My guess is that it's to drive people to the higher-end model.
Yeah, but I mean, this device of all devices, they should have the room to stick it in. That's... Okay, I'm not down with that.
I'm sure they do have room to stick it in, but that's not the point. This is about creating a very distinct separation between the two.
Right. Yeah, all right. No, fair enough, no doubt. So it is a huge device, and they talked a lot about how they redesigned a bunch of stuff for it. It certainly looks gorgeous. It's designed... You know, it's kind of... I thought it was kind of weird when... all right, so it's 2780 by 2048. How's that sound?
That sounds about right.
Let me actually confirm that. We are professionals here.
I know it has like 5.2 million pixels. It has more pixels than the MacBook does on its display, which is, by the way, pretty much the same size as an iPad Pro.
It's 2732 by 2048.
So you're pretty close.
Yeah, I was close, but I was wrong. But the 2048 number is interesting because that happens to be the... It's a... What is it? 24... What is the iPad Air 2 resolution?
I'll let you look that up.
But we are top people. 2048 by 5036. 1536, I like to call it. So essentially, the width of the iPad Pro matches the height of the iPad Air and Air 2,
right? Which they mentioned in the demo. They even laid an iPad Air 2 on top of an iPad Pro.
Well, that was the thing that I thought was kind of weird, because Phil Schiller specifically noted that iPad Pro was the same height as the iPad Air 2, the width is the same as the height. But it's not double. The height of the iPad Air is not double the width. So he said it's enough to have like all of your iPad Air app running with more room left over to the side. But it just seemed like that would have been a more compelling thing to talk about if it had been twice. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
If the iPad Pro was twice the width of the iPad Air, that seems like it would be more compelling to me.
That probably wouldn't have worked right for resolution scaling.
Yeah, that's probably the issue there.
But I mean, the size, it sounds pretty big, but knowing that this is essentially ripping the lid off of a MacBook and handing it to you, that it's definitely going to be bigger in my hand than an iPad Air, but I have a feeling once
I start using... Wait a minute. The resolution's the same, but it's bigger. It's a 12.9-inch screen, and the iPad with Retina, the MacBook with Retina display is not that big.
No, that's about the size of the MacBook display. They're pretty close to the same.
13.3-inch. Okay, yeah, nice thing corrected. God, I just bat 1,000 here.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a long day, and you're saying these things with conviction. So, you know what? You get a participation trophy.
No, wait a minute. Hold on. That's the wrong device. That's the wrong device.
All right, pick a different one that better suits your argument.
I am trying.
I believe in you, Brian.
I am.
Well, while you look it up, hey, that Sphero BB-8, how bad do you want one?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, man. That's like the most awesome thing ever.
Okay, MacBook specs. I finally found it. Safari was giving me fits. 20.
You should have just looked it up in Mac Tracker.
It's 12 inch. It's 12 inches and it's 2304 by 1440.
Oh, okay. So the iPad. So this is like about the same size as a 13 inch MacBook Pro lid.
Yes, closer. It's almost in between, and its resolution is actually higher than both. So its resolution is really high.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome.
You know, seeing the demos, as they were showing stuff off, I was getting more and more excited when Adobe came on stage and they started demoing with what they've done with the iPad Pro. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing I was sitting down.
Explain.
Okay, so they started off with Adobe Comp. C-O-M-P, Comp. Mm-hmm. And what they did without really telling people this is what they're doing was they did a full-on page layout on an iPad Pro. So this isn't Adobe InDesign, which is Adobe's professional page layout application. But they did something that I haven't seen before, and no, Pages doesn't count for what they were showing. They did a page layout. They mocked up where everything lays. They were able to put content in. And they were doing the sorts of things that I expect to see in a professional page layout application. And then they were sending content back and forth between Adobe. I just forgot the photo image editing app that they showed off. But the point is, they had a photograph of a person and they needed to do some retouching. So the image goes off to this other Adobe app. They do the retouching. It goes back into Comp, and then they used Adobe Sketch and were doing some other like vector drawing type things and popping that back into Adobe Comp. What they were doing was showing that it's actually possible to do full page layout, like pro page layout, on an iPad Pro. And when I saw that, it was like, okay, we have now crossed the threshold where a tablet can be a true professional design tool. Now, the apps aren't all the way there yet, but Adobe showed that they can be, and the iPad Pro has the horsepower to do this. That's like crazy for me.
Yeah, that is super interesting. And a side note, it sounds like Wacom is in trouble. This is a competitive threat to Wacom's tablet business.
Potentially. There's...
Well, when you combine iPad Pro with, say, Apple Pencil or maybe you know, some other styluses that might come out in the future, you can start doing things in a way that is far more natural than using a tablet that is displaced from your screen.
That's true. Now, there are places where having the traditional Wacom tablet is still going to apply. And just so everyone knows, I have an Intuos tablet connected to my MacBook Pro now.
That's a Wacom branded tablet?
Yeah. It's one of the Wacom models, and I love it, and I can't imagine not having it. My Cintiq is not connected right now because I just don't have room, but where am I going with this? My point is that where I see Apple giving Wacom a gut punch is with the Cintiq line. Hmm. Because the Cintiq is the tablet where it's also a display. Hmm. And there are apps out right now for the iPad Air and the iPad Mini. So presumably they'll work just fine on the iPad Pro that let you use your iPad just like a Cintiq. Now, currently you don't have the pressure sensitivity resolution that you get with a Cintiq. But with Apple Pencil, that advantage may go away because that Apple Pencil looks like it has a pretty high pressure sensitivity resolution. Plus, It recognizes the angle of the stylus, which is something that Wacom has always had as a leg up on just the regular tablet style drawing things, because a Wacom stylus will register the angle you're holding the stylus at. You can do that with Apple Pencil. That's a huge thing right there.
All right, all of which makes sense. And to play devil's advocate to myself, as capable as the iPad Pro may be today and even in the future, there are still things that a mouse and keyboard with a tablet combination will be superior for creative and professionals. I'm thinking CAD in particular.
Sure.
For them to do that, a touch interface will remain inferior to a mouse and keyboard interface with an attached tablet.
I agree. And although I can see where that benefit or that advantage could go away, depending on how the apps evolve, because there's a lot of people that are working with CAD apps where instead of using, say, a trackball or a mouse, they use a stylus and tablet. So
no, right. I know. But then sometimes you need to go back and forth because there are things that need to be done that a mouse is still better than touch.
Sure. But if they can figure out how to make those work better for a touch interface, then I can see that's an issue.
Yeah, fair enough.
And the keyboard thing, they've already taken care of that because they released the Apple Surface tablet keyboard. I mean, the smart keyboard.
It snaps into place.
It looks like Microsoft's Surface Pro keyboard.
It does, except for it's probably, we haven't used it yet. I have no doubt that it's better and that it's, you know, that it's a higher quality.
Well, I'm assuming it's device. Better. Microsoft does keyboards well.
Microsoft does keyboards better than the rest of the Wintel world.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Microsoft does keyboards better than Apple.
I, surprisingly enough, I may disagree with you on that. I'm wishy-washy. I'm not a big fan of Apple's keyboards.
Fair enough. All right, but let's not go down that rabbit hole right now. Let's actually talk about the smart keyboard. It's using the same mechanism that Apple first introduced with the MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
And it snaps into place. It's $169.
It gets its power right from your iPad Pro, so you don't need to charge it separately.
And you don't need to connect it. You do the snap it into place just like the Surface.
Yeah. So, I mean, my guess is that Apple looked at the way Microsoft was doing the keyboard for the Surface Pro, and they thought, oh, yep, we see how this works, and we see how we can do this a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, plus, you know, note that that Apple didn't introduce this keyboard for iPad Air 2, and note that iPad Air 2 was not updated to iPad Air 3, despite the fact that I really want one very, very badly.
Yeah, it looks like I'll be holding on to my iPad Air for another year.
Yeah, I bet you we see iPad Air 3 this spring.
If we do, I bet the change is like a performance bump, not a dramatic change.
I would argue that we will get probably get a little more than that.
I hope so.
Because if not, then we'll probably just wait until next fall and we'll actually just go 2 years with the iPad or 2 years. Maybe they're going to phase it out. I don't know.
It's hard to say. I mean, the iPad Mini 4... it's an iPad Air 2 in a small case.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's hard to say. I hope they don't get rid of the 9.7 inch screen size, which is the iPad Air size.
I think that's a
really good size.
It's my favorite form factor. It is my all around form factor. And the iPad Pro looks great. It's because I take my iPad with me all the places.
It's probably a little big for what you want to do.
I'm not the iPad Air. Excuse me. The iPad Pro was not aimed at me. That's for sure.
No. Well, you're not really using your, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but you're not really using your iPad Air as a content creation device.
Only from the standpoint of editing. But so I've talked before about the fact that that being able to read both my novel's manuscript and then the manuscripts of other writers, being able to read that as if it were a book in iBooks and being able to take notes in iBooks, that has been a huge benefit to me as a writer. But the iPad Pro, to me, is not the kind of device I want to have in bed to read with.
I wouldn't take my iPad Pro to bed.
I don't.
That doesn't sound right. But
I don't think I even want to read I don't think I want to read a novel on an iPad Pro sitting in a in an easy chair.
No, I don't think I would do that either. But I can see where this has the potential to be a really powerful content. Art content creation device for me.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And there are certain kinds of content that will probably look amazing to consume on it too. I'm not saying that it's a bad device. I'm just saying that the ways that I want to use an iPad, that form factor is not going to be better for my personal needs.
And this is one of the many reasons why I hope the iPad Air gets a revision up to version 3.
Yeah. Yeah. If the iPad Air went away, I would go mini before I would go pro.
I would too. Now, that said, I am going to get an iPad Pro and an Apple Pencil. And I've already had friends sending me texts saying they can't wait to see what happens when I start drawing on one.
Yeah, the pencil looks amazing. We haven't even really gotten to that. So this is Apple's long rumored stylus.
Mm-hmm.
And a final revocation of Steve Jobs. He said on more than one occasion, we got 10 styluses at the end of our hands. Our listeners should know how much I admire Steve Jobs and how much, what an amazing individual I think he was. But that statement was always just infuriated me because of one basic, simple thing. Picasso didn't make finger paintings. Most artists don't make finger paintings. You know, paint brushes evolved, not because people couldn't figure out how to do it better with their fingers, but because it is a better tool for making some kinds of art.
Yes.
And Steve Jobs in particular, his insistence at the root of this was his insistence that you should never need a stylus to use the iPad or the iPhone. And that I agree with.
Well, now in context, when he was originally talking about we don't need a stylus, it was when the iPhone was introduced. And the competition, like every other smartphone on the market, you needed a stylus to interact with it.
No, you didn't need a stylus for the BlackBerry. But you needed a stylus for a lot of Palm devices.
Yeah, for Palm devices, you totally needed a stylus.
And some Microsoft devices, too.
Yeah.
Or Windows devices, I should say. Windows Phone, I think is what it was called at the time. But it's true. That was the context of when he said that. But even at that point, it was also still true that there are some applications where a stylus is better than your fingers. And this was particularly offensive when Apple pulled styluses out of the Apple Store. Because you don't need it. Got 10 with the internet. Just
infuriates me. I thought that was a totally inappropriate move on Apple's part, because at that point it was already really obvious that people were gravitating towards using styluses for artwork.
Specifically for art.
And I have several styluses that I use for art.
Exactly. Anyway, Steve was wrong more than once in his life, and he was, you know, he would spin things, like when he said it's about the music, stupid, talking about why Apple would never release an iPod that did video 6 months before Apple released an iPod that did video. That wasn't him being wrong. That was him spinning and controlling the message.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, he was a master of.
He was a master of that. That was a lie, not an error. Right. But which is fine. It was brilliant. But this business about having 10 styluses at the end of your finger, so Apple wasn't going to support them, that just makes me mad. And I'm glad that we are finally past that. I'm glad that Apple has acknowledged the fact that artists and other creatives and possibly CAD people and who knows who else can actually use a stylus to better do stuff on an iPad.
And notice it's available only for the iPad Pro. So that tells me that Apple wants to make sure people see this as a tool for content creation on the iPad that they are going to push at professionals for content creation.
Bloody well let us use it on the iPad Air and the iPad Mini as well.
I'm assuming the reason we can't is because, and I don't know that this is what Apple did, but I'm speculating. I think with the iPad Pro, Apple improved the sensor resolution for that grid that tells where a finger is.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of being limited to 4 millimeters, it goes down probably like to 1.5 or 2 millimeters.
Right.
And because of that, the stylus won't work with the older iPad models because they don't have a sensor grid that is dense enough to work with the stylus.
You're probably right, but if that's the case, well, I don't know, maybe they haven't. That's if there's a technical reason for it, then I certainly understand
Maybe this is why we don't have an iPad Air 3, because what Apple wants to do is update the iPad Air 3 with the higher sensor grid.
Right.
And at that point, it will work with the Pencil as well. Now, keep in mind, I'm totally speculating here, so I could be completely off base.
Yeah, I like that speculation. I like that speculation, but there's another bit of speculation too, and that is, why does iPad Pro not have 3D Touch? We haven't talked about that yet in the show.
No, the only place we have 3D Touch is on the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus.
Yeah, I'm really surprised there was no Force Touch implementation. And 3D Touch is Force Touch, which was introduced. It's part of Apple Watch and it's part of MacBook, the trackpad on the MacBook. And it's part of the iPhone, the 6S and 6S Plus, as you just said. But it's not part of the brand new iPad Pro, and I'm personally surprised by that.
I wonder if that's a technical thing as well. I don't know. Now that you say that, it seems odd that Apple would not include this.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that, but. It does seem true. All right, before we move on to the iPhone, let us talk about Casper. Casper, I'm lying on it now. I'm not actually lying on my Casper, but I wish that I was, because I love lying on my Casper mattress.
I love my Casper mattress too. I wish I was lying on mine.
Yeah, taking a nap. Oh, a nap sounds just really good right now, doesn't it?
Oh. It sounds really good.
You know, I loved my Casper the moment I got it. You know that our readers and our listeners know that. Our readers may or may not know that, but our listeners definitely know that. I've talked about it enough. You talked about it enough. But it was really driven home for me in August, because I took a 3 week trip, and it turns out I couldn't take the mattress with me.
Well, you just need a bigger car.
Or actually, what I need is a big vacuum. like roll it back up, put it back in the box that it came in, and take it with me everywhere I go.
You need Time Lord technology.
I would. Oh, Dan, that's like a fantastic. Anyway, I didn't take it with me. I couldn't take it with me. And I missed it. I could not. I had my the people that I was staying with in each of the places I went to. They were all wonderful, and they gave me wonderful beds in wonderful homes, and they were fantastic. But I couldn't wait to get back to my Casper.
Yeah, I totally get that. Mine has been so comfortable for me. It's helped me with my sleep issues,
mm-hmm.
and that's a really big thing.
Yep.
And I love that the way they do the foam layers, instead of being this like alien facehugger thing for your whole body, it supports your body, and so you don't sink into it and get stuck, but it's not so firm that you lay on it and feel like you're sleeping on a board. It's the right firmness and the right squishiness.
Yeah, it is. It's the right balance. Of course, you don't get hot with the way they've done it too, which is a really good thing. I love my Casper mattress. I cannot tell you enough how much I love my Casper mattress, and I'm so glad that I have one. And they are sponsoring us. And because they are sponsoring us, that means that you can get your own Casper mattress for $50 off.
Which is really saying something, because they already charge a lot less than their competitors do for this level of quality. I have the queen size mattress, $850, and comparable other places, it's going to be over $1,000.
Yeah, for sure. And you can get that for $50 off. You can get it for $800 by going to casper.com/TMO. That's wrong. It's completely wrong. It's casper.com/ACM.
Yeah, it's casper.com/ ACM.
That's for the Apple Context Machine, which I think is the show we're doing.
It's been a long day. I'm not sure what show we're on right now. But let's go with that. This is Apple Context Machine today.
Yeah. At casper.com/ACM with coupon code of ACM. So just enter that coupon code. You're going to get $50 off. They're going to deliver this thing for free. It's going to come in a box. It's
bigger on the inside.
Yeah. It is it's you'll be amazed when you get it. And it has all the air taken out. And then once you actually open it up, it takes only minutes for it to be usable.
Yeah. From the time you pop it out of the box to the time you can lay down on it, like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Seriously. It's an awesome mattress. You guys need these.
You do. I love it. And I'm so glad they're sponsoring us. We would like you to show them some love, because they've showed us love. And give them some business. If you're looking for a mattress, you should do this mattress. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah, totally.
I wish I could go lay in it now.
Well, you could, but then people would just listen to me talk about Doctor Who and Star Wars for the next 15 minutes.
Hey, man, there is an audience for that.
You know, there probably is. Yeah.
Right. So, iPhone 6S.
Yeah, looks like the iPhone 6.
Yep.
But it's different on the inside.
Yeah, that's a lot different on the inside. So, the big thing, the big anchor technology that they were first emphasizing is 3D touch, which is this new implementation of Force Touch.
Don't feel bad about messing that up. Craig Federighi did it on stage.
Oh, did he? I missed that.
I totally caught it. And I pointed it out to everyone that was following along in our live stream.
That's good. Well, so 3D touch, it's Force Touch. So basically the device registers how hard you're pressing on the screen. Mm-hmm. And it will do different things according to how hard you're pressing, and it gives you a little haptic feedback that makes you feel like you're actually pressing something.
Taptic feedback.
Thank you. Taptic feedback. Well, it's the taptic engine, but a taptic feedback.
All right.
Taptic engine is the name of the technology that Apple developed to make this possible. But what it is it's haptic feedback.
It's haptic feedback. Yes.
Right. So it'll give you different results according to how hard you're pressing. Now, at the operating system level, what that means is that you can do stuff like get a sheet with information, right, without having to leave an app.
Yeah, like contextual menus on your Mac.
Yeah, similar to contextual menus, but with a lot more information. I mean, a lot more advanced, a lot more developed. And then if you I think it was like a light touch will bring up like your calendar, for instance. Like if there's a date in an email, and a light touch will bring up the sheet with your calendar with that day, but you're still in the mail app. And if you press harder, it will actually then move you over to the calendar app. This is useful. This is really useful stuff. This is going to change the way we interact with our devices and the apps on those devices.
Yet we're going to be using our home buttons less and less.
We will probably be using our, yes, it's totally true. And this is before, of course, you know, game developers get a hold of it. We saw, what did you catch the name of the game with the mech? Because it looked amazing.
Yes, and now I can't remember what it was called. It was like, I want to say Freebird, but that's the song you yell out when you're drunk. I can't remember what it's called.
Well, you're a professional. So it was a fantastic looking game. You're in this big 50-foot mech, and you're like, you know, towering over a city, and you're fighting all these, you know, normal human-sized
robot scorpions,
robots, and yeah, whatever. And it did things like allowing you to use 3D touch for game controls. So, I mean, we're going to see a lot of stuff coming from third-party developers as they learn how to exploit this technology to do really cool things. And in the meanwhile, Apple has already built lots of really cool things into the operating system level. And it's cool. I like it. It is, like I said, it's going to change the way we interact with our devices. And I think it's going to become second nature really quickly, which, of course, is going to be weird when you're using all of the other iOS devices out there that don't have this, including the brand new iPad Pro.
Oh yeah, that's a really good point.
You know, it's like with Touch ID. I've got, what do I have? I've got the original iPad Air, and I've got an iPhone 6. Well, how often have I tried to use my finger to make a purchase or unlock my iPad Air? I can't even tell you how many times, because I'm so used to it. It's so natural, because it makes so much sense on the iPhone.
Yep. You do it a lot.
Yeah.
I pick up my iPod Touch all the time and look at the screen and wonder, why is it not waking up?
Exactly. Now, of course, in this scenario that I just described, I could solve that by getting the iPad Air 2.
You could.
But that wasn't my point. My point wasn't to complain that the iPad Air doesn't have it. The iPad Air was introduced and it didn't have it. That's fine. My point is that using Touch ID on my iPhone is so natural, and it has become such an everyday part of how I use that device, that when I go to another device and it's not there, it's just weird. And I feel like that's what's going to happen with 3D touch until Apple actually has it permeate the entire product line, which I certainly hope it does.
My guess is that it will come, and they just chose to make this an iPhone specific feature for now.
Right. Like Touch ID. When Touch ID was introduced, the iPad didn't have it.
Right.
So hopefully it'll come. That may in fact be why this was sort of our segue. This may be why the iPad Air 3 was delayed, because they want to be able to do 3D touch.
Well, now you're assuming it's delayed.
Not delayed from the standpoint of oops, but not announced now delayed. This is,
all right. I'll accept your weaseling out of that one.
No, I'm not weaseling out at all. It's been a year since the iPad was introduced. iPads have been revamped every year or sooner.
Yes. So this will be the longest the 9.7-inch iPad has gone without an update.
Correct. I call that a delay, and I think it is a delay. And not because it was a mistake, but Apple decided not to introduce it this year after that year point. So therefore, they're delaying it after that year point.
All right, I'll let you get away with it.
I don't even think I have anything to get away with.
Well, that's okay. you can think that.
Fair enough. Looking forward. Yeah, like I said, I'm 3D Touch looks amazing. I haven't been able to use it yet. I certainly have used it on the Apple Watch. I love it. I've experienced it when playing with the MacBook. I love it. It is a great advance in user interface, and I want to see it on the iPad too.
I want to see it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it there.
Now, let's see. What else did Apple shut off? Apple actually showed off Touch ID, too. They're calling it that. So it's an improved version of Touch ID that's a lot faster. They say, like, twice as fast? Is that what they were saying?
Twice as fast.
Yeah. So basically, it'll recognize your fingerprint just all the sooner. I don't think anyone was really complaining about how long it took Touch ID to do it, but I'm guessing...
It's a relative thing. When I pull my iPhone out of my pocket and tap the button and my screen and, you know, my iPhone unlocks, it's just fine. When I'm someplace where I need to do something on my iPhone right now, it feels like it takes forever for it to work. And I'm sure it's just a relative thing. It's not taking any longer. But if I need to be in my iPhone this second for whatever it is, it feels like that's when Touch ID just turns into molasses. So for stuff like that, I will probably be less cranky.
Also, fair enough. I'm assuming that one would notice it the most when one uses Touch ID 2 on a new device and then actually goes back and uses it on an older device.
I bet you're right.
And that, like, oh yeah, that is faster. So that's cool, but I think that some of the coolest stuff was shown on the camera.
The camera. I'm really excited about that.
Well, let's talk about the FaceTime camera first. This is the front-facing camera, the one that you can look at for selfies or the one that you can look at for doing stuff like FaceTime calls.
Yeah, so that's now a 5-megapixel camera.
Yep, yay, good.
Yep, that's good. So for that streaming audio stuff, you have much higher image quality. That's going to be nice.
Yeah, I guess it's. I mean, it's still going to be streaming video, so whatever.
Yeah, but I'm already impressed with the streaming video I get when I'm FaceTiming, and I actually do FaceTime a lot. So I'm looking forward to seeing a higher resolution camera for that.
Okay. All right, I'll give you that. That hasn't really mattered to me personally, but I don't do FaceTime all that much. The thing that I think is really, really cool about what they're doing is what they're calling retinal flash.
That's so cool and so brilliant. And why hasn't it happened before now? I mean, I'm not saying that in a complaining way, but it's one of those things where now we see it, and one of the first thoughts is, oh my God, this is so great. Why hasn't anyone done this before?
That is a good question, and there's probably actually a good reason for that, and that good reason is going to be that Apple has made... All right, so let's explain what retinal flash does.
Yeah, what it does is it matches the ambient light of the...
Back up.
Okay. It takes your display, and it turns it into a flash.
There you go. So when you take that selfie... The display is going to light up bright enough to act as a flash.
Right. So it actually goes 3 times brighter than the display normally handles.
And that's probably why we haven't seen it before, is because Apple is specifically making the display do this.
Right. They designed a custom chip to manage this so that it can happen.
So now tell them the killer feature.
What it does is it matches the ambient light so that the color that you get from the display flashing is the same as the ambient light matching that you would get from the flashes that are with the EyeSight camera, which is the higher resolution camera on the back of the iPhone.
That means selfies that aren't washed out, amongst other things.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it really is very, very clever. It is really cool. I look forward to playing with it. I'm not a big selfie taker, but I'm still looking forward to playing with it. And For all those narcissistic people that are out there that love to take selfie after selfie after selfie, they're going to just be all that much better quality, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, because if you take selfies that I like seeing, I'll like it even more when they're better color quality.
Yeah. And then on the back, on the EyeSight camera, the Apple is bumping the resolution. Thank you, up to 12 megapixels.
Which is great, because it's more than just bumping the megapixels. They've reworked the sensors so that that instead of just getting more pixels, you get better quality to go along with those pixels.
Deep trench isolation. I thought that was hilarious.
That was my Blue Oyster Cult cover band.
Phil Schiller mentioned deep trench. He used that as a way of saying that we're not really going to go into all the things that we've done here. But apparently deep trench isolation is one of the technologies that Apple is either using or developed to make.
I think they're using.
I got that impression too. To make the image quality at 12 megapixels be high.
Yeah, so basically, from what I understand, what this does is it allows the sensors to gather more data, and so realistically more light, and it does so in a way where that's not bleeding over to other sensor points as much. So you get crisper images, you get better color reproduction, you get an overall better image.
Yeah. And the images they showed us were amazing. They gave iPhone 6S models to professional photographers, had them go take photographs, and then showed us photographs that they claimed had not been retouched or altered in any way whatsoever. This is how they came out of the iPhone. And they were just amazing. They showed a low light photograph.
That was really stunning.
It was stunning. I mean, the iPhone 6 already takes surprisingly good low light photographs.
Yes. But
the stuff that they showed us was even more amazing. And the resolution of this thing is so high that you can shoot and edit 4K video right on the iPhone.
Yes. That's amazing.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. The one photo that blew my socks off,
mm-hmm.
It's the one where they were inside a ferry. And so they were shooting inside the ferry, and you could see outside the window out into the harbor at the same time. And you didn't have one area blown out and another underexposed, it was perfect.
The key there is that there were two light sources. There was ambient light outside coming from that thing. What do you call it? The sun?
The sun.
And then you had light coming from inside the ferry where you had some sort of, ugly light.
Artificial lighting.
Yeah, artificial light fixture that was above. And the light fixture is there, and the light coming through the window, the ambient light, is there. And as Jeff said,
It was all perfect. The exposure for the interior light and the exterior light was spot on.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rather remarkable, to be honest. And then I think that my favorite, the panos, you can do like a 63 megabyte panoramic shot. Is that right?
So yeah.
Or is it 63 megapixel panoramic
shot? A megapixel.
That makes a ton more sense. Yes.
Yeah, megapixel.
So you can do these enormous panoramic shots. And like the detail you can get is just amazing. All that stuff. The photographs are going to look amazing. But the thing that I thought was the coolest had to be live photo.
Oh, yes. Where Apple turned Harry Potter photos into reality.
Yeah. We must give credit to Kelly Gumont for pointing that out in TMO Towers. Because she did. She's the one that pointed it out.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah. So what live photo is, it's a still photo. But if you touch the still photo that is a live photo, you get animation, you get movement, you get a video. A few seconds.
Yeah. To me, looking at what they were doing, if you went old school, very rudimentary, it would be like having a lenticular image where you have someone and they just move a little bit in the image.
Well, what it's doing is it's capturing. So like as you're holding your phone up and you press the button, it's capturing more than the tiny fraction of a second that the frame is captured. It's actually capturing additional frames after that. But the one frame that actually serves as the anchor is the still photo you meant to take. And that's the thing, because there's a difference between video and still photography. Things look differently. You think about how you're going to capture them differently. This to me is like the marriage of the best of both worlds. You have the still photo that represents this moment in time, but you touch it and you get
A breath of life in it.
Yeah, you get more. And I love that. I mean, it's like everything that Vine or Instagram could have been.
Yes.
Instagram videos, I mean.
Yes.
You know, and I certainly hope that Instagram in particular incorporates this. I hope that they let us post live photos. Apple may not let them. I don't really know how that's going to work, but I hope so because I think it's cool.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work either. What I do know is that you'll be able to look at these images on other devices running iOS 9 and on Macs running OS 10 El Capitan and on Apple Watch. So you can use them as watch faces. Yes, but I don't know if it's just the new models.
I believe it's just the new models, which makes sense.
Sure.
And we didn't even talk about Apple. Dude, we're at a time, we're an hour, and we didn't even get to Apple TV.
That's okay, because John and Kelly and I talked about it this morning on Daily Observations.
Yeah, all right, that's good. That's good. Yeah, the live photo, though, what you're seeing, so you can make it your watch face, and if you hold your arm up, that's when it becomes animated.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. Live photo is a cool thing, and it's like this is the kind of new thing that Apple, what am I trying to say here? Someone like, you know, Samsung does like S Voice and, you know, like duplicates features that Google is doing better or tries to do something that Apple is doing. And it's not new. Like, I mean, the Samsung doesn't bring anything new to market. Live photo is a new thing. It's a brand new thing, and it's really cool.
Actually, I don't think it is a brand new thing. I think that there was a Nokia phone a couple years ago that bombed.
Oh, really?
Had this.
All right. Well, in that case, Apple's just a copycat.
But still, they're doing this in a compelling way and on a device that people are actually buying.
There's that. I did not. I'm bummed. I did not realize there was.
I'm sorry that I took that from you.
No, I would rather know the truth. You know me.
Yeah. All right. Well,
so let's find that out. Maybe we'll actually do some research. LOL. Before the next show.
It's funny how you say that.
All right. Well, we are. I'm sorry we didn't get to the Apple TV, folks.
That's okay. We'll put a link into today's Daily Observations so you can go back and listen to that.
Yeah, maybe you and I can talk about it next week.
Yeah, we can do that too. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
We can.
Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.